is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com. Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Wednesday the 20th, 2020 today. Interesting set of numbers if you're into numerology, but a great day to be here anyways. Today we're going to talk about nutrients for the body to function effectively. The reason we thought we'd go over that is so that you have an understanding of the basic components in the body and what can help protect you or work for you as opposed to against you when you're dealing with all the C narrative stuff going on, whether it's the jab or the injections or whatever. So we're going to go a really brief overview of the vitamins, minerals, fats, amino acids, enzymes, hormones, neurotransmitters, et cetera, in the body. So you, just very, very briefly with each component, so you have an understanding what work can work for you and how you can benefit by paying attention. Obviously, the more information we have, the better decisions we can make. The question is, do we have the right information? That's all in today's world that we've said so many times before. It used to be, thanks to the Matrix, people would say, are you going to take the red pill or the blue pill? Today, we've got the red pill, the green pill, the orange pill, the yellow pill, the purple pill, the whatever. So we have to be careful of who we're listening to and do they actually have correct information. And in conjunction with that, when we're dealing with sciences, medical sciences in particular, obviously is what we're dealing with here, science is an ever-evolving process. So that's the whole point of science, is to grow and expand and go deeper and broader and further, go where no man has gone before, as Star Trek would say. It is an ever-growing process, but unfortunately, like with virtually anything, everything that I know of, it can be used in a positive place and it can be used in a negative way. It can be used to support mankind and it can be used to damage mankind. So we have to always be careful. What are we looking for and why and how is it being used or abused? So one of the famous quotes, at least for me, from MASH, the sitcom, was, and I don't know if it was Hawkeye or if it was the Major, who was Colonel Blake, maybe it was, who said that we were $1.32 worth of chemicals. I always loved that saying and it really stuck with me. So that made his marriage worth $2.64. People misuse the term chemical an awful lot today, calling all chemicals toxin. Well, if you go back to your grade 8 chemistry and the periodic table with hydrogen and nitrogen and oxygen and silver and gold and had all the different components in there. Well, we're made up of all those components. Some of them are made up of two and three different types. Give you iron as an example. We have three different types of iron in the body. And they're stored in different ways and they're utilized in different ways. So some of the chemicals that are on that periodic table, we have a tremendous amount of them. For example, calcium. For some, they're used in a huge number of ways, like magnesium. And some are only trace amounts, like copper or iodine. So let's go through the minerals, the vitamins, the fats, et cetera, and find out what our body is made up of, and very, very briefly, what they do for us and how they can be of help to us. So to begin with, the body is supposedly, and I always say supposedly because who knows down the road what we might find, but currently it's believed 16 essential elements, 99% of which are oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon, calcium, and phosphorus. Then we have about 80.85% of the remaining 1%. That is sulfur, potassium, sodium, chlorine, and magnesium. Those 11 are considered essential. Then we have what we call the trace elements, 0.15%. And that includes cobalt, copper, iron, molybdenum, manganese, selenium, iodine, chromium, and zinc. Now, of those, we know, and you know, you've all heard when talking about the immune system and how we need to strengthen the immune system, especially in those last couple of years, zinc is an important component to the immune system, even though it is trace. Now, magnesium isn't one of the most abundant, but it's the one most broadly used, as we've just said. In a basic cell, forget about the complex cells, et cetera, just in a very basic cell, magnesium is used over 380 times in a cell. You get more complicated, we have more magnesium usage. So even though they're not the major ones, they're hugely important to us. Calcium, we've already said, is most abundant. Most people know that. They're necessary for bones and teeth and cell signaling. Regulated by the parathyroid, and that's important to know. That's why I always tell people, don't take calcium supplements, for crying out loud. We have lots of calcium still in our food. It's not like magnesium that is depleted. There is lots of calcium. It's regulated by the parathyroids. If you got too much calcium in the blood, the parathyroids send off a hormone to the bone saying, don't make new bone. We don't need any more calcium in the body, because we release calcium as we're making new bone. It also sends over another hormone to the kidney saying, don't reuptake the calcium. Please let it go. We've got too much already. And then if you continue to have high amounts of calcium, you get calcium plaquing. And that in particular can cause problems not only with bones, but right in your arterial vascular system. So we don't want to take extra calcium. Now, where do we find a lot of calcium? In foods, your greens, broccoli, collard greens, spinach, milk, yogurt, cheese, almonds, sardines, they all have lots of calcium in them. Chloride, oh, I didn't finish the sentence. Chloride can be of help to make a couple of different things. In fact, the hydrochloric acid in your stomach. But for the most part, we have too much chloride in our system. They say when they look at the chloride that's used in toothpaste and dentists use on your teeth, well, it's only in trace amounts. Yeah, but when you combine all the chloride we're getting in the water, et cetera, then we've got too much in the system. Okay, so we're always telling people, when you take drinking water from your tap, leave it on the counter overnight, let the chlorine, most of the chlorine will evaporate into gases and leave, and then you've got a much healthier water in the morning. Magnesium, we've already talked about how it has over 380 different functions in a base cell. When your mitochondria, those are your fuel-producing components of the cell, they use magnesium 180 times to make one compound of ATP. It's used in ion transport, cell signaling, cell migration, production of biomolecules, even the structural components of cellular membranes and chromosomes need magnesium. Where is it found? Figs, spinach, dark chocolate, sunflower, pumpkin seeds, cashews, and peanuts. I'm just giving you where the highest concentrations are typically found. Also note that that will, with each item I give you that those things on, that depends on the soil ultimately. The problem with commercial food, commercially grown food, is the soils are hugely depleted, as we know. That's why we're always pushing to grow your own food. Golly gee whiz, how many times have we gone over that? And, of course, in the last 2 years, I've been saying for over 2 years now, you're going to see a huge increase in food pricing, and we're going to see a huge increase in need from the food banks. So if you're not interested in your own health and you're not interested in your wallet book, then think of the food bank and others that you can support as well. Okay, phosphorus is important to bone formation, cellular membranes, and your energies, both your ATP and ADP. The T stands for phosphorus. And it's important to not only creating, building, structuring, repairing your DNA and RNA. It's found in pumpkin seeds, turkeys, beets, salmon, oysters, eggs, cheese, Brazil nuts. Lots of things. Potassium. Now, that's important in a variety of different ways. It is a cofactor for a large number of enzymes, which I put in there, but it's also important for what's called the potentiation or the electrical current that goes down the stem of a neuron and in your cardiovascular, especially in the heart muscle. It is important for the potentiation there as well, although it is important in all muscles. Okay, where can you find it? White beans, zucchini, yogurt, potatoes, spinach, mushrooms, and bananas. Again, depending on the soil. Sodium, it helps to maintain proper blood volume as well as blood pressure. And we can lose it through the kidneys if the kidneys aren't functioning properly. Sulfur, important for the formation of two amino acids, your cysteine and your methionine. Now, cysteine, as you probably recall, is really important in your production of glutathione. It's part of the glutathione complex. Your methionine is also very important in your methylation cycles. And your methylation cycles, there's a variety of different types, but they're involved in 80% of what a cell does. So sulfur is important there too. Sulfur is also important in building your 29 different types of connective tissue, as is vitamin C. So sulfur is very important for us. The reason they're called major is because they play such important roles in so many roles, as well as so many different roles in the body. So as much as trace minerals may be trace, think about what they're actually doing. So cobalt is a trace function or a trace mineral, but the only thing we know of at this point that cobalt is used for is vitamin B12. And certainly if you have an excess of cobalt, which you can get along with chromium, you can get if you have knee implants or hip implants, what have you. My mom suffered tremendously. There was a couple of class action lawsuits that I had found. There's three of them. And I sent them to the osteosurgeon saying, look, we're not interested in laying a lawsuit, but I need to know if you think this is what's causing mom's problems. And she does have, I think it was 21 of the 24 symptoms. And he sent me back a four-page letter explaining how it couldn't possibly be. But thankfully, her doctor had a lot of faith in me and said, okay, you know, if you're asking for it, we'll actually send and get the test on these two. Well, they were way, 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 way too high. And as you might have guessed, we used glutathione to bring it all back down again. She was absolutely amazed. How the heck? She didn't even know what glutathione was. Never mind that we could have this kind of impact. And I did it within 3 weeks. It was pretty good. Anyway, let's move on. Copper. Now, copper helps to form several enzymes. You know, we have over 10,000 different types of enzymes in the body. And it assists with iron metabolism. It assists with the creation of your hemoglobin, which you need your red blood cells to take on and release both oxygen and carbon dioxide. And obviously carries the oxygen in the blood. It's also important in the production of connective tissue. The challenge with copper in today's world is if your water infrastructure through your city, town, what have you, is too old, you're going to get a lot of leakage of copper, and that can cause copper toxicity. So you have to be careful there. Fluoride, we've already said, yes, it does strengthen bones and it wards off tooth decay in given amounts, but typically we all have way, way, way too much. Iodine is very important to the thyroid. We know that. It's important to the production of T3 and T4, your two major hormones. The conversion of T4 to T3, however, happens in the liver. We've talked about that many times as well. And if your adrenals are either hyper or hypo, if your liver isn't functioning properly, they can all interfere with the enzymes, the deiodinases, that do the conversion of T4 to T3. And the doctors, typically your MDs, typically don't know that. So if you don't see enough T3 on their results, they automatically put you on Synthroid, when in fact you are making enough T3, you're just not doing the conversion of T4 to T3 because of the liver and the adrenals. So rather than putting you on Synthroid, of course, we identify what's the underlying cause and try to eliminate the cause. But where's iodine found? Iodine is found in dairy and grain, eggs, poultry, and, of course, seaweed. So we eat lots of sushi. Challenge with sushi is you don't want to eat the raw fish. I love sushi. Thankfully, I don't like the raw fish because I can't stand the texture of it. It's slimy to me. But that's a good thing because eating the raw fish can cause a lot of problems. You want to eat the fish that is cooked. All right. iron is best known for carrying the oxygen, we said that, through the body on the red blood cells, but it's also an important component for the metabolic proteins and enzymes. It's found in chicken, beef, spinach, beans, cashews, dark chocolate. Again, notice how often we come up with dark chocolate. Let's just take a side note on that. We've said this many times. I actually wrote a book. You can go to drhollybooks.com if you're interested. The book on chocolate, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, how chocolate has over 1,400 nutrients for the body, compounds in the body, over 400 nutrients. It even has neuropeptides and neurotransmitters. It is fantastic if you get good, healthy chocolate. So what I suggest to clients is make sure you have chocolate that's at least 88% and higher. You want all those nutrients. I eat chocolate daily. I love chocolate. But the challenge for me with chocolate is not the taste. It's actually the texture. Texture is huge for me because for most of my life I didn't have taste buds. Now that I do have taste buds, we were actually went through a long process trying to get the body to make them, and it did, and it's like, food's a lot different when you have taste as opposed to just texture. But for me, bitter chocolate, I don't like the texture of it. And a real simple way to get around that, if your family loves chocolate and such a good nutrient, is to buy the bitter chocolate, the 88% and higher. And then rather than putting in the GMO soy lecithin that the commercial guys put in to make it so that it just dissolves so beautifully in the mouth. I just love that when chocolate dissolves in your mouth. Put in butter or avocado oil or coconut oil. Do it in a double boiler because chocolate burns easy. And you can make all kinds of different desserts with it. Now you have a really good chocolate that dissolves really nicely. Okay, let's move on. Manganese is an antioxidant, and it's particularly an antioxidant in the mitochondria. It works with enzymes, all kinds. I don't remember how many enzymes it works with. It works with bone development and wound healing. It's found in figs and spinach and cashews and, again, chocolate. Oh, and squash, which squash, don't forget, is so easy to grow in the garden, especially your zucchinis. They just grow and grow and grow. They're like tomatoes. They grow like weeds. Selenium. Selenium is important for your immune system and metabolic functions, as well as the production of glutathione. Selenium is huge to the immune system. And, of course, glutathione regulates the immune system. So you want to make sure you've got good selenium in your diet. And I don't have any foods there. Sorry about that. I got distracted at that point, I guess. I stopped doing that. Okay, zinc. We know zinc helps with blood clotting. It's essential for taste and smell, which I didn't have enough zinc in my system. And it bolsters the immune response. So in addition, we have to be careful of overload of any of these. For instance, if you your doctor, your MD, puts you on iron, he's going to put you on a pharmaceutical iron, which is a synthetic iron because they can't patent the real thing. Now, synthetic iron is very hard to absorb. It's hard on the gut. It's hard on the liver as opposed to natural iron, plant-based iron. And plant-based iron is easy to absorb. And it's also easy to eliminate. But if you, the pharmaceutical one is hard to eliminate once you've got sufficient, so you can easily get iron toxicity, and that is hard on the body and on you. In addition to which, too much of any given mineral can prevent other minerals from being absorbed. Calcium is bad for that, and actually too much calcium in the bones will prevent other compounds like boron to be absorbed, which the bones need in order to make good healthy bones. Too much phosphorus will prevent the absorption of magnesium, et cetera. Okay, so you got a brief overview. We need all those different minerals. They're important to the body. They do a variety of different things. Like most things in the body, no one compound, mineral, vitamin, whatever, only does one thing. They all do a variety of different things. Okay, there are 30 vitamins that we know of at this point, although some are mislabeled, if you wish. You're probably familiar with vitamin D3. It's not a vitamin at all. It's a hormone for crying out loud. However, there are over 30, and these vitamins and vitamins are micronutrients. They are organic, and they can be broken down by heat, air, or acid, whereas minerals are inorganic, and they hold their chemical structure. So, for instance, we all know that there's a number of different forms of vitamin A. There's a number of different forms of vitamin D3, although D2 is usually synthetic. There's a number of different forms of vitamin C, many of which are synthetic. The water-soluble ones are vitamin A, B1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 9, and C. How come I've got B2 twice in there? I don't know. What do the water-soluble vitamins, or what are they involved in? Several of the B vitamins are important as coenzymes. Now, that means that the primary enzyme can't function without the coenzyme being there. It helps, it supports. It's not the primary, but it does do a supportive component. And they help to, in effect, release energy from food, as well as producing food. Now, we already said that magnesium is used for over 180 different places in the mitochondria for making your ATP, your fuel. Well, about 70%, 72% of when magnesium is used, you also need vitamins B1, 2, and 3, thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin. Niacin is another one that comes in a variety of different forms. Vitamin B5 and B7 are also engaged in energy production. When you're building proteins, when you're working with the building cellular structure, etc., B6, B12, and folic acid, again, folate, folic acid, they are B vitamins, but different forms of the same vitamin. And they are also used in metabolizing amino acids. You know that your amino acids are your building blocks of proteins. They help cells multiply or replicate. They also are incredibly important in collagen production. So we have 29 different types of collagen in the body. Collagen 1 is the most highest quantity, if you want, in the body. Collagen, to make collagen, you need vitamin C, you need sulfur, as we've already said. When your collagen starts to break down, you're going to have weak muscles and bones. You're going to have weak nails and hair. You're going to get wrinkles. It's the collapsing of collagen. So we do need to help our body support the collagen, and your B vitamins and your vitamins in general are very important in that. Okay, in today's world, an important component with these vitamins is in neutralizing the spike protein. Now, there are several ways we can achieve a healthy system after we take a jab, if you chose to do that. And they say 70% of those who actually did get jabbed took it in order to maintain an income, which is unbelievable that governments would do that to people. But what we can do with that spike protein that we know is so incredibly dangerous, we can neutralize it, we can inhibit it, and we can detox it. So make sure that you know that your vitamin C is important for that. Okay, fat-soluble vitamins are vitamins A, D, E, and K. So what are they involved in? They're involved in bone formation, especially A, D, and K. They protect your vision. You know, all your different A vitamins and your carrots for the C are important to protect your vision. Vitamin E is really important in helping you to absorb and store vitamin A. So they work interactively as well. Vitamin E, like vitamin C, is an antioxidant that interacts with your free radicals and stabilizes them so that your body doesn't have a difficult time. And, of course, don't forget glutathione. If you have sufficient glutathione, it will restabilize any antioxidant after it's given its electron after it's given its electron away to another compound. Okay. Upon absorption, the fat-soluble vitamins can enter your lymph vessels before making their way into your bloodstream. Note that most of your detoxing out of cells also goes into your lymph system first, which acts like a filtering mechanism before it goes into the blood. Your fat-soluble vitamins usually have to be coupled or hooked onto a protein in order to travel through the body. These vitamins are used throughout the body, but excesses can be stored in fat tissues as well as in the liver. As additional amounts of these vitamins are needed, your body will tap into those reserves or storehouses and release them into the bloodstream from typically from the liver. Okay. So if you're not getting sufficient, make sure that during the summer, say, for instance, where you're making all your D3, if you're not putting sunscreen on to block it, you make lots of D3, it gets stored in the liver for you. Okay. All right. Then we have the fat. We've gone through the minerals. We've gone through water-soluble vitamins. We've gone through the fat-soluble vitamins. Now we need to look at fat. And, you know, we can go back down to the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s. Fat made you fat. And all fats were the same. And that is so untrue that we need the healthy fats as much as the bad fats can do a lot of damage. So be careful the type of fats that we have. They're important in the perception of taste. They're important as a source of energy. They're important structural building blocks in the body, cellular membrane. They carry the vitamins, the fat-soluble vitamins throughout the body. They're important in neural functioning and the insulation or myelination along a given neurons. We have millions of neurons. They all have that insulation called myelination that protects them. That's made out of fat. They're important for growth and development. They're important for carrying various compounds in the blood. They're important for all kinds of different things. So let's break them down, look at them a little bit. We have our basic groups, ALAs, DHAs, and EPAs. The ALAs are the basis of hormone-like and anti-inflammatory compounds like your prostaglandins and your leukotrienes. They're important in blood clotting and wound healing. They're supporting the immune and cardio system. And the body can convert the ALAs into longer-chain fatty acids that might be aromatic acid cycle and your EPAs and DHAs, all of which are actually used in the brain. Don't forget your brain is about 70% fat, and it has the ALAs, the DHAs, and the EPAs. The DHAs are more predominant to reduce the risk of heart disease and break down your triglycerides it actually doesn't so much break down LDL that it improves your HDLs, the good cholesterols. Again, fights inflammation, supports the brain and eyes, and actually may be very effective in improving ADHD. We've done that successfully many, many times. What about your EPAs? They're really important in neural functioning as well, again with ADHD, but also with depression. Now, of course, that depends on what's causing the depression. I've even had depression caused not only because of the gut. We know that one well, that if you have an imbalance in probiotics in the gut, they can affect your thoughts, your emotions, as well as your behavior. But if you don't have sufficient fats in the brain, that can cause depression. Low magnesium can cause depression. In my book on depression, I think it came up, I wrote the book like 12 years ago, but I think at that time we had 22 different items in the body that could cause depression. EPAs are really great for preventing heart disease. They lower the triglycerides and they lower the blood pressure. They're good for rheumatoid arthritis, for Raynaud's, and for things like lupus, autoimmune disorders. So EPA, fats are incredibly important. Now, as much as we've said ALAs, DHAs, and EPAs, those are all a component of the omega-3s. Predominantly anti-inflammatory, they improve the heart, they support neural functioning, they decrease liver fats, and they're found in oily fish, nuts, and seeds. Now, your omega-6s are another category of fats, and they are the pro-inflammatories, and we have way too much of them in relation to the omega-3s in our body, which everybody's always pushing, get those omega-3s up, because we have too many omega-6s. And it's really important now that we're dealing with this whole narrative the last 2 years, because we need those different fats in the body to help protect us. So, remember, the scientists found that the virus actually attacks fat cells. Now, we focus predominantly on the immune cells, the ACE2 receptors, and predominantly in the lungs, heart, kidneys, and gut. But they also attack the fat cells. And the omega-6, a particular omega-6 that you need to focus on is the linoleic acid, which can stabilize the spike protein and blocks it from interacting or connecting to the ACE2 receptor. And that's pretty important. Now, the funny thing about it is, guess what it's found in? It's found in foods that we typically tell people not to eat. So the biggest sources of linoleic acid in North America is actually found in processed foods. It's found in pizza and bread, french fries, pasta dishes, mayonnaise, potato chips. It's like, oh my goodness, we've been telling people not to eat these. Well, now we need to abide by the 80-20 rule and let you have those french fries every once in a while because they have the linoleic acid in them. Or we can say, hold on a minute, people. They are found in healthy foods, too. They're found in nuts and seeds, and in particular sunflower seeds and Brazil nuts. They're found in pecans, and they're found in cheese. I'd much rather you focus. Oh, and they're also found in chicken. I would rather you focus on those good, healthy foods. But now you have an excuse every once in a while to eat the unhealthy ones, too. All right, the omega-9s, the most common one is the oleic acid. The body can make these, and in fact, don't forget, the body can convert different fats into your DHAs, into EPAs, into ALAs, et cetera. So that's a good thing. And where do we find the omega-9s that your body can create? Is in nut oils, obviously nuts and seeds. Okay, now, remember the avocado. We've talked about this many times. Avocado is a fantastic fruit to eat because it not only has a high level of glutathione and other nutrients in it, but it has basically the same ratio of omega-3, 6, and 9 that the body has. Okay? And between that and the glutathione, it's a great way to neutralize that spike protein. So get those avocados. Now, the challenge we always say with avocados is almost ready. It's ready. It's gone. It doesn't maintain the level of ripeness very long. In fact, one day is pretty good. So what I suggest to people is when it's hard, chop it up into salads, just like your Granny Smith apples. Chop them up into salads. That way you and your family can eat them. When they're soft, then you can use them for all kinds of things like guacamole or shrimp and avocado sandwiches or whatever else you might like. I love pouring feta cheese and balsamic vinegar over soft avocado. To me, that's just absolutely awesome, but we're all different. But get that into your body to help neutralize the spike protein. So what are proteins in and of themselves? Well, we have 21 proteins in the body. They're amino acid building blocks. So for the 29 different types of collagen, the over 10,000 different types of enzymes, for your neurotransmitters, for your cellular processing, you need all these different building blocks. And those are your amino acids. So there's one simple way to get that. If you have a really good hemp oil, now you have to make sure it's a good hemp oil because cannabis of any kind likes to absorb all the toxins in the soil. We don't want all those toxins. We want nice, clean hemp oil. So you have to make sure who's harvesting the hemp, where it's growing. And the harvesting and bottling of it can actually processing and the harvesting and processing can both interfere, can kill, can damage your amino acids. So again, you want to make sure you've got a really, really good hemp oil. But it does have all the amino acids, both the essential and the non-essential. Remember, essential is what we need to get from our diet. Non-essential is what the body can make. So, again, enzymes, neurotransmitters, peptides, hormones, connective tissues, they all require amino acids. So you need to get good amino acids. Now, the one I always come back to, of course, is glutathione. Many times have we heard that. And glutathione is made up of three different amino acids, but the one cysteine is the one most unstable of all the amino acids. And that's why we take NAC or NAC, the N-acetylcysteine. N-acetyl stabilizes the cysteine so that we can absorb the cysteine into the cells so that the cells can make your glutathione. And, of course, that neutralizes the spike protein. Both actually NAC and glutathione both neutralize the spike protein. Antioxidants in the body. Well, we know glutathione is by far a million times more powerful than anything else. And like NAC, like we just said, it eliminates the spike protein. But there's all kinds of antioxidants in the body. CoQ10 and superoxide dismutase, or COD, are commonly known ones. But they are a ton. Of course, they're in tons of food as well. Then your berries, again, your dark chocolate, your artichokes, kale, cabbage, they're all loaded with antioxidants. But the most powerful ones for getting rid of that spike protein are your glutathione and your NAC. Now, in addition to all those, we also have all the phytonutrients. You've heard of bioflavonoids and polyphenols and tannins, et cetera. Well, there's over 25,000 different phytonutrients found in plants. Your polyphenols, they are broken down to your flavonoids, your flavanols, bioflavonoids. There's just all kinds of them. And then we have tannins, and we just coumarins. We have avocados and carrots for the carotenoids. We have the organo sulfates. We have ligands. We have tomatoes and watermelon that, you know, for the lycopene for your eyes. We have the kale and the apples that we always talk about for the quercetins. Berries and grapes for resveratrol. The curcumins found in turmeric, which are, we've all said, are anti-everything, anti-cancer, anti-viral, antimicrobial, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and consequently because of their ability not only in and of themselves to function, but in their capacity to help make glutathione, they, in and of themselves, as well as with the glutathione, help to neutralize the spike protein as well as the graphene. Now you have an idea of your fats, your antioxidants, your phytonutrients, your vitamins, your minerals in the body. That is such an incredibly brief overview, but it gives you an idea how these different things work and operate in your body and why it's so important to have a good, healthy diet so that you get all these nutrients in the body. Next week, I was thinking we could focus on antiviral herbs, obviously, for a given reason. Okay. We're having to be very, very careful. I don't know if you know, but of all the people that Nicole gets on the program, of course, she has awesome people throughout the week, throughout the month, but it's my articles that keep getting taken down because I challenge the system and I challenge all the narratives. So we're trying to work around that, which is why we're taking a bit of a different approach to the articles that we put up and the conversations we have about it. Okay, let's move on to the questions. Oh, and I should say, there's a lot more information I gave to you about how these different nutrients can affect the spike protein or the graphene oxide. I chose not to put them in the article for that exact same reason. We don't want the articles to be continually taken down. So if you want all that extra information from now on, you're going to have to listen to the program as opposed to just read the article. All righty, let's move to the questions. Just checking here to don't have any. Okay. Shelley in Toronto, my doctors are telling me I'm now allergic to our family dog, which has to go, and I'm not willing to do that. There must be another way. Can Dr. Holly suggest something? Oh, my goodness. That would be so hard to do. I've only been up since 4 o'clock and didn't get to bed till midnight, so I'm allowed to yawn. You'll just have to excuse that. I love dogs, and I love big dogs. Most of my dogs have been Rottie Shepherds, either with Husky or Lab or something else in them. But Rottie Shepherd Cord, they are an incredibly intelligent dog. They're an incredibly loyal dog, and they're awesomely cuddly and playful and fun. So I've had several sets of dogs. Usually I have two at a time. I don't have any right now because when my father moved in, he asked that we not have dogs. I said, okay, I'll wait till you decide to cross over. But I sure miss my dogs. All right. So my heart goes out to you, number one. But if you are having an allergic reaction, typically the most common allergic reaction is the histamine that is released from the mast cells. Now, it can be other processes, but that's the most common one. So when an allergen attacks the mast cell, then the mast cell releases the histamine, and then you get, you know, whether it's in your eyes, in your nose, your sinuses, your throat, your skin, what have you, that's what's causing the problem. Now, there's a fairly easy way of resolving that, and that's using urticadiosis or stinging nettles. Now, you know that if you come up against stinging nettles in the woods and it gets on your skin, oh my goodness, the burning, itchy rash that you get from it is horrible. But when you process it into a tincture, it is now one of the best tinctures there is to have. It cleans out your, not so much your lymphatic, but cleans out and rebuilds your blood. With regard to the mast cells, what stinging nettles or urtica diosi do is they block the receptors so they can't be triggered, and so now you don't produce histamine. Pretty cool, eh? So you don't have to go to the store and get an antihistamine, which can do damage. You can actually take a natural herb that will block the receptors in a healthy way and prevent you from having a histamine response. Pretty cool. Another option you can have is acupuncture. Acupuncture can sometimes process. Now, natural and antihistamines include, there are natural ones, and vitamin C is actually an antihistamine. What's called Buddha burr is not only used for migraines and hay fevers, but again, allergic reactions. Bromelain and probiotics are also used as antihistamines. Quercetin, we've talked so many times about quercetin, and the best apple that you find quercetin in is your Granny Smith apples, and in particular in the skin. But quercetin can be found in your berries, in black tea, broccoli, grapes, ginkgo, green tea, peppers, red onions, red wine, especially organic wine, all have quercetin in it. And quercetin can be used to block the mast cell receptors so that you don't get the reaction. So hopefully that will help you. And again, there's four different types of reactions. The most common is the histamine reaction from, and most commonly from the mast cell. So that's the one we've looked at. Okay, Trevor in the UK, how can one overcome chronic bad breath? Well, that depends, again, we always say, on what's causing it. If the bad breath is caused because you have an imbalance in the bacteria in your mouth, then the bad bacteria can actually not only destroy your teeth and your gums, but cause bad breath as a result of that. But it could also be that you have a gut issue that's going on. And I don't know, they used to say gut issues were a lot more predominant in creating a bad breath than the bad bacteria in your mouth, but I've seen controversial studies on that. But what can we do? Number one, drink water. Don't drink juice and soda. They can dehydrate you, as can coffee and tea. So when you're thirsty, just like when you're hungry, if you're hungry, you eat. When you're thirsty, you drink. Don't abide by that 8x8 rule. That was absolutely nonsense. And it was purported by a woman back in 1968 who, in a traveling kind of magazine, said, if you've been working out for a couple hours and you've lost all that water through your perspiration, maybe you should replenish, maybe uptake glasses of water a day. Well, that was taken to be a rule of thumb within a very short period of time. And when they went back and actually interviewed her, she was dumbfounded at how fast and quick that became a rule when she had done no scientific study on it whatsoever. In fact, the scientific studies they've done since then show that it's hard on the arteries and veins, it's hard on the kidneys, et cetera, et cetera. So when you're thirsty, when you drink water, just like when you're hungry, that's when you eat food. But make sure, again, it's not fluids that are going to further dehydrate you. It could be that you need to use a good toothpaste. So you want to get rid of your Crest and your Colgate. They're full of not only toxins, but GMO corn fillers, et cetera, et cetera. You want to use a really good, healthy toothpaste. The one that I use is Neem. I love the Neem toothpaste. And the one that I like the best is from Furlow. So you can go online and order it through Furlow if you like. But that's not to say that's the best or the only one. There's lots of them out there. Check to make sure what their ingredients are. Just because they come in the natural health food store doesn't mean that they're good. So my favorite, like I said, is Furlow's Neem, and it comes in two different flavors, anise and mint. You can get either. I go back and forth between them. But they are really good to help kill the bad oral bacteria and support good oral health. Okay. Another thing that could do a similar thing is oil pulling. Oil pulling pulls out the pathogenic material that we use in Western society as opposed to Ayurvedic medicine. Western, we use a tablespoon of either coconut oil or lard, as I like to call it, or hemp oil. Both of them are very good at cleaning out, pulling out pathogenic material, but after you've swished it in your mouth for 10 to 15 minutes and you spit it out, you need to then rinse with a quarter teaspoon baking soda and a quarter cup of water, because you've left a layer of oil in the mouth, and that layer of oil is going to have the highest pathogenic material in it. So you want to get rid of that and restabilize the mouth. You do that with the baking soda and water. Now, you don't want to use baking soda all the time. Some people brush their teeth with baking soda, and the baking soda will actually end up taking the enamel off your teeth. So you don't want to use it on a daily basis, okay? But the oil pulling can certainly say, did it every day, twice a day for a couple of weeks, and then went off of it and used it maybe once or twice a week after that. That solves if the problem is due to bad bacteria in your mouth that's creating teeth, tooth and gum rot in your mouth. Even rinsing your mouth out with warm salt water can benefit. Again, depends on what's causing the problem. Now, if the issue is the gut, it could be in your stomach, it could be in your intestines, and that can definitely cause a bad breath issue. So you have to be able to clean out the gut. One way to a real simple solution to cleaning out the gut is taking a tablespoon of castor oil in a cup of warm milk at night. And it doesn't have to be dairy. It can be almond. It can be coconut milk. And then again, first thing in the morning, then just drink fluids until you eliminate. And that helps to eliminate not only the sluggish stool and what have you, but a lot of crap, pardon the pun, in those intestines. Now, typically, like if I get a client to do that, I will then make sure that they follow up with good pre and probiotics as well as transfer factor to resupport the gut with its immune system. So remember that that is an important component as well. Heavy metal toxicity can cause bad breath. Again, using baking soda and water. Typically, I get people to do that in the morning. And if you're going to use the apple cider vinegar, do that at nighttime, a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and a glass of water. And doing that can often clean up. It can help to regulate the pH as well in the gut to support good, healthy bacteria in the gut. So in general, eating a good, healthy diet, lots of real fruits and vegetables, in particular apples and carrots, will help you to reestablish a good, healthy gut and get rid of the bad breath. Now, if you have leaky gut syndrome, if you have any of the inflammatory issues in your guts or diverticulitis in your guts, or now I'm seeing other issues, you may have to go a lot further than that. You need to see a herbalist or a nutritionist or doctor of natural medicine or a naturopath or an Ayurvedic physician or what have you to help clean out the gut and make sure you've got a good, healthy gut and get rid of that bad breath. Okay? So I've given you a variety of options, but it really, again, as usual, depends on what's causing the issue. All right. Cheryl in New York, what can I do instead of painkillers for headaches? I get them pretty much every day. It sounds like you might be having cluster headaches because you're getting them every day. Again, what's causing the headache? Is it a stress headache? Is it because of structural damage that's in the spine, in the nervous system? Is it because you've got too heavy blood, your kidneys aren't functioning properly, and you've got really heavy blood, and as the blood flows through the brain, it's because your brain doesn't have pain receptors, it has pressure receptors. So if your blood is way too heavy and thick because your kidneys aren't filtering it out properly, because the liver isn't functioning properly to prepare things for the kidneys to take out, you can have heavy, thick blood, and that, of course, can cause headaches. Low magnesium can cause headaches. Heavy metal toxicity can cause headaches. Pinched nerves, allergies can actually cause headaches to foods or alcohol. Lack of sleep, insufficient food can cause headaches. There's so many different causes for headaches. So once again, like we do with so many things, it's important to identify, to determine what the cause is before providing any kind of protocol. Now, often people find success with simple solutions, immediate solutions, like, say, putting mint or anything from the mint family over the bridge of the nose between the eyes. And that can often, if it's pressure in the brain, that you'll often get tears coming out of the eyes, and that's enough to release the pressure that's there. While you're trying to find out, you might look at something like TEA, which is an acronym for like a 25-letter word I can't pronounce, but it's a compound that the body makes, and it is very effective with a lot of different types of pain. But you want to find out what the cause is, not just bandage it. Now, that's what Western medicine does. But let's just take a side trip here for a moment. With each of these things, and we've been doing this for years, and I don't think I've ever brought this component in, but when you ask the question, which I'm grateful for, all the questions, we like to be able to help you in any way we can, but I typically start out by giving you 5, 10, 15, 20 different causes for that symptom, which tells you that differential diagnosis is hugely important. And when you go in to see an MD and you've only got 10 minutes to see the MD, how the heck are they supposed to be able to identify a differential diagnosis as accurate? They can't. They don't have time. There's so many different things and symptoms. I mean, granted, the MDs are not taught to identify the original cause. They're only taught to identify enough to figure out which prescription to prescribe to control the symptom, to manage the symptom. That's not what we're about. That's why we take so much longer. I rarely have a session that's less than 20 minutes. And when I do initial intake, that's an hour and a half to 2 hours. So we can figure out what's causing the problem. There's no point for this one that Trevor in the UK has asked about, Cheryl in New York, sorry. Of course, it applies to any. But, what can I do to help headaches? Well, there's no point in taking extra magnesium if, in fact, it's the kidney that's causing the headache. There's no point in doing something for the kidney or the magnesium if it's blood clots that are causing the headache. So please appreciate, the reason I go over so many different causes is so you can try and work through them and figure out which one is really the problem so you can address the actual problem and not some peripheral issue that may or may not even be contributing to it. Okay, and have some compassion for the MD who, like in Canada and BC here, and you go to see an MD, you only have 11 minutes. I don't know, and what the heck are they supposed to figure out in 11 minutes? Like, that is just absolutely ridiculous and tells you how distorted and dysfunctional our whole medical system has become. It is useless. I mean, not only are they not taught anything about nutrition, they're not taught anything about all the heavy metal toxicities, they're not taught about, a thousand and one different things. I mean, typically they don't even know what glutathione is. You know how often things come back to glutathione, for crying out loud. So to be able to give a differential diagnosis is hugely difficult with Western medicine. And not only are the doctor's hands tied with the gag legislation, that if they say anything against or not on the narrative that they have out there for this C virus, but their hands are tied in so many different ways. They're not taught, this is my big thing in med school, they're not being taught differential diagnosis. They're not being taught to identify the underlying cause. They're being taught how to manage symptoms with drugs that deplete your system. Don't forget, 99% of drugs deplete the body of nutrients. 48% of the 250 most commonly prescribed drugs cause cancer. The number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction are pharmaceutical drugs, soon to be 5G, I'm sure. All right, we've got to squeeze in here. We only have a few minutes left. Allison in Winnipeg. Suddenly, a ton of people I know subsequently have COVID right now. What's up with that? And the point to note is all of the cases appears to be nothing more than a cold. Well, this has been going around because the last year or so has been pretty soft, so now we're going to have more of an intensive. So you'll probably find, earlier in the year, the winter months, we had quite a few cases that were pretty intense. But they don't typically have the C virus. How do we know that? Well, number one, we know the PCR testing tests for dead and alive. It tests, you know, 95 to 100% are false positives. And when they do the real test, it's usually influenza A or B. But the real tests aren't being done because the doctors aren't supposed to give them. Doctors are just supposed to give the PCR testing and push the jab. So that's why everybody has diagnoses right now. You know, in the past, we never pushed people to go get tests for anything and everything, but we've known that PCR testing, they push people to get the testing regardless. Well, there was graphene oxide in it. There was a reason for them wanting everybody to have that. So I would respond, you know, when people tell me they've had COVID, I always say, oh, probably not. You know, the PCR testing is 95 to 100% false positive, so why would you put any faith in that whatsoever? And the influenza A's and B's are going around right now. So that's probably what you have, you know. Let your body create natural antibodies for it and do what your body is designed to do. Get over yourself and get over our medical system. Uh-huh. So just as an aside to that, at one point way back when, I made a chart when I was doing a clinical presentation. I made a chart of all the different flus that we had, the influenzas A, B, and C, the retroviruses, adenoviruses, coronaviruses, et cetera. And we put them into a chart with all those different possible symptoms. And, of course, each type of category of virus has its own particular profile of symptoms. But when it comes to the C virus, it's anything and everything. Again, pointing to the fact that all the different viruses and bacteria going around are being referred to as the C virus. It is not that. But you get to choose whatever you want to believe, the red pill, the blue pill, the green, yellow, orange, or purple pill. Anyways, I don't go along with it. It's up to you what you choose to do. It's up to you how far down the rabbit hole you want to go with all the information about all the political nonsense, the medical tyranny, the money laundering, the child trafficking, all the horrific stuff that's going on in our world. And I would suggest that 98-99% of the people are good, wonderful people. But the 1% that are psychopathic and don't care about people, only care about themselves, want control, want finances, etc., are willing to sacrifice the rest of us. So we have to stand up and fight. So we have a variety of different programs that you can stand up and work with. Of course, you can always create your own. I think we've got too many out there already. I would rather everybody come together under one umbrella and fight the same cause. Freedom. We want freedom. Freedom to think the way we want to think. Freedom to take whatever medical modality we want to take. Freedom to believe whatever faith we want to have. Freedom to vote for whatever political party, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I fight for freedom. It's up to you what you want to do. To passively sit back and discuss it doesn't have much of an impact. You have to go out there and fight. We are fighting, and a lot of people say we've already won the war. We're just going through the steps. Other people say, no, we're losing the war, so who knows what to believe. The point is, are you willing to just sit back and allow it to happen, or are you going to take a stance and fight? I encourage you to fight. Fight cognitively, non-aggressively. Use your emotions to create the world that we want to come out of all this chaos. We have that phenomenal opportunity in this time and place, unlike any other time and place, I would suggest. It is an incredible opportunity for us to pull out of the chaos and use our minds, use our emotions, use our prayers, our meditations, our creative thinking, whatever you have, whatever tools you use that God gave you, the universe gave you, source gave you, your higher self gave you, whatever you want to believe in. That's a freedom as well. But whatever tools you have to create a new, beautiful world to come out of this. So here's to y'all. Hope you got something out of today's session. And we will talk with you again next week. Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness website, choicesunlimited.ca, has my contact information if you wish. Choose well. Think well. Be well. Take good care. Bye-bye now.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.